Okay, great. So this is work with Chris Ferry and Joe Emerson, who are both here. And conveniently, the topic of the talk is the same as the title. So sort of the big picture question which we're trying to address with this work is sort of what are necessary and sufficient resources for quantum computational speedup? I mean, we believe that quantum computers outperform classical ones, but it's sort of not totally clear like what a quantum computer is exactly. Like, what do you have to have access to in order to do quantum computation? And so the result is that we pick out this quantity, negative gross Wigner representation, as a necessary resource for computational speed up in this magic state model of quantum computation. And the magic state model is basically a model for quantum computation where Clifford operations are picked out as a distinguished resource. And we'll talk about that. That will be well motivated in the next couple of minutes. And then this has a couple of corollaries, so the first one is we establish the existence of bound states for magic state distillation. And I mean, I'll explain why that's interesting, but if you're already familiar with the model, the basic idea is that there exists quantum states which you can not prepare using just Clifford resources. So it's impossible to get them using Clifford operators, but they don't promote Clifford operations to full universal quantum computation. And then there's a second sort of corollary of this result, which is that we show that you can efficiently experimentally verify this when you have access to this negativity quantity. And sort of, I mean, hopefully by the end of the talk you'll agree that that's a nice thing to do. But I mean, sort of as a first, hint of why that's interesting, this sort of says, this gives an efficient experimental verification of a non-Clifford resource, right? The thing that you need to add into the Clifford group to Clifford operations to get quantum computation. So in conjunction with like randomized benchmarking, which does the opposite thing, which gives you, an efficient way of testing if you can do Clifford operations well. This sort of gives you like a full spectrum of being able to efficiently test if a physical implementation, some device that you've built, is capable of quantum computation or not. Right, it sort of gives you the full spectrum of verification. Okay, so what is a quantum resource, right? There's one sort of well-known example or well-known result, important result in this field, and that is that entanglement is necessary for quantum computational speedup in the circuit model of quantum computation, right? So entanglement is like a fundamentally quantum resource in the sort of operationally relevant scenario, right, where you say, I have access to local control and classical communication, right? So you say, oh, look, operationally, entanglement is a hard thing to generate. So we say, like, if we don't have entanglement, then we are classical in a well-defined sense. We can't get quantum computational speed up. And so we say entanglement is the quantum resource that we add in. Right, but I mean the sort of important takeaway here is that we had this operationally motivated notion of classicality in the first place, right? Like we said, LOCC is in some sense, the classical thing, and then entanglement is the natural thing to look at to promote that to quantum. So, if we look in, I mean this isn't fundamental, right? So we could pick out other operationally motivated scenarios, and one of them is this magic state model or sort of Clifford computation where we say, due to results in quantum error correction or maybe these results with like topologically braided anions, Clifford operators are somehow easier things to do. I mean, they're the natural error protected resource, or at least like the best schemes that we have do error protection on Clifford unitaries, which is just, some finite group of unitary operators. Right? And so it's a reasonable operational restriction to say, look, we have access to Clifford operations as the things which are sort of experimentally accessible. These are the operationally motivated operations. And then what additional resource do we need to add in order to promote just the Cliffords to universal quantum computation? Right, so this is sort of the question, right? And this is the analogy. So in the same way that entanglement is useful if your operational restriction is like LOCC, I want to convince you that negativity is useful if your operational restriction is to Clifford operations. Great, And so the magic state model in particular is a way of doing universal quantum computation using Clifford operations and the ability to prepare some non-stabilizer and solid state with, like, just take repeat preparations of that. Great. So yeah, so the assumptions of the magic state computation is that you are able to repair stabilizer states perfectly. So you have error-free preparations of stabilizer states, and that's just a distinguished class of quantum states. You're able to do Clifford group transformations perfectly. So there's like this distinguished class of unitary gates, which you can do without any error. And you're able to do projective stabilizer measurements in an error-free way, right? So these are the resources that you assume you get. And via the Gottesman-Knoll theorem, it's known that this is not sufficient for universal quantum computation. So you need some additional resource. And the additional resource allowed by the magic state distillation protocols is the ability to prepare some highly noisy ancilla state, right? So you say allow a lot of noise on your ancilla preparation, so you get some mixed state, and this is your the ability to prepare. This is your additional resource, right? And the idea is that you now take many copies of that, of this highly mixed state, and perform a distillation routine using just Clifford operations to get out one particular state, ancilla state of higher purity, right? And so you just distill a non-stabilizer state of very high purity, and then you consume that state to implement a non-Clifford unitary, and in this way you can recover full universal quantum computation. And sort of the open problem about magic state distillation is which states enable quantum computation. So it's known that it's even obvious that convex combinations of stabilizer states cannot possibly enable universal quantum computation, right? Because if you can do your operations with just classical randomness and Clifford elements, then you know it's sufficiently simulatable. And via explicit constructions, we know that past a certain purity threshold, mixed states can. We have some explicit protocols for doing distillation and getting to universal quantum computation. But there's this sort of mystery region where you are not a mixed, where you're not like a convex combination of stabilizer states, and you're not pure enough for the explicit protocols to work, where it's not known if there's some novel protocol that we haven't discovered yet which would enable universal quantum computation, or if it's still somehow fundamentally impossible. Right. So this is a problem that we will make some progress on. Okay. Great. So our technique for sort of attacking magic state distillation for understanding it is going to be to make use of this quasi-probability representation framework. And the basic idea of quasi-probability representation is you want to map quantum theory onto a classical probability theory, right? And, you can't do that because quantum theory isn't classical probability theory. But you can map some sub-theory, right? Some distinguished class of states and distinguished class of measurements will map, respectively to proper probability distributions and proper, conditional probability distributions in an obvious way. And then the transformations, some distinguished class of transformations, can be mapped to stochastic transformations over an ontic space, right? So for instance, one way to do this is to say, well, let's take the Q-trit, right? Which you need 9 minus 1 real numbers to specify Q-trit state, right? And map it to a probability distribution or a quasi-probability distribution, right? Which might be an indicator function over this 9x9 grid, right? So the general framework, if you want a non-contextual mapping, that's a mapping which sort of doesn't care how the state was prepared, like the probability, if the probability distribution, which corresponds to a quantum state, is fully specified by its density operator, then according to work by Chris and Joe, you sort of have to take a mapping of this form where the value of the quasi-probability distribution at a point in the phase space is just given by the trace of your density operator with some Hermitian matrix, right? And then to specify quasi-probability mapping, you pick out this set of Hermitian matrices, and then you'll find that some states or some measurements will map to a negative probability somewhere, right? So this is the general framework, right? And then somehow you want to say, look, negativity is an indicator of non-classicality in the same way that people do for the Wigner function, but this is sort of a very dubious statement to make, because you have like such a wide choice of mapping, right? Like for any particular state, you could always find some quasi-probability distribution in which that state would have a non-negative representation. So you need a little bit more. And the little bit more here is to sort of say, well, at least in this magic state model case, our natural class of distinguished states are stabilizer states. And our natural class of distinguished measurements are stabilizer PVMs. And our natural class of distinguished transformations are Clifford transformations, right? And so it turns out that at least for odd dimensional systems, it is possible to construct a quasi-probability representation such that all stabilizer states map to probability distributions, right? And all stabilizer all stabilizer PVMs will map to proper conditional probability distributions, and Clifford operations are just going to map to permutations of an underlying ontic space, right? And so this is the quasi-probability representation picked out by David Gross from a larger class of discrete Wigner functions defined by Gibbons, Hoffman, and Wouters. So this is what we call the Gross-Wigner representation. And so the idea is that all of your Clifford resources have a non-negative representation. And so intuitively, if your ancilla also has a non-negative representation, right, then everything that you would do in a distillation protocol can just be represented as some stochastic process over this ontic space of so you just map quantum states to probability distributions over this d by d grid, right? And I mean that's it. And so your ancilla doesn't have to be represented non-negatively, right? It may or may not have non-negative representation, but intuitively, if it does have non-negative representation, then it seems plausible that it's not going to give you a universal quantum computation. But of course, plausibility is sort of a weak thing, right? I mean, I've waved my hand, so now the next two slides will be convincing you that this is actually true. And like all good proofs, this one will be a proof by intimidation. So this is a slide where I've just put on a lot of definitions. The technical details of which are maybe not so important, right? But the point is this Gross-Wigner representation, you're mapping to distributions over a d by d discrete phase space, right? This mapping is so the value of the distribution at any particular point on the phase space is just given by the trace with a Hermitian operator, right? And the construction of this Hermitian operator is explicit, right? Like we know what it is. We can write down these operators. And they have one of the important features of them is that these phase point operators, right, which map to points on phase space, have the very nice feature that they just have a tensor product structure, right? So for a composite system HD tensor HD, the phase point operator is just going to have the structure AU1 tensor AU2 V2, and as I say, that is very nice. And so the salient features of this particular representation, and these were proved by David Gross, is one, a pure state or a projective measurement has non-negative representation if and only if, excuse me, it's a stabilizer. All right, and so this is called the discrete Hudson theorem, which is an analog to the usual Hudson theorem, which says that in the continuous variable case, a pure state has non-negative representation if and only if it's a Gaussian state. Great, and then the further salient point, and this is maybe even more important, is that Clifford operators are stochastic transformations on this phase space in the sense that they just permute the points of the phase space. And in fact, they're even nicer than that, because those of you who are already familiar with Clifford operations may know that you can just consider it as a faithful representation of some symplectic group of low-dimensional matrices over a finite field. And in fact, the permutation of the points of the phase space just reflects this symplectic structure, right? And this will be important, and we'll see why. Okay, great. So how do we show more formally that negativity is really necessary for magic state distillation? Well, we already said that Clifford operations correspond to stochastic transformations. So the idea is take an ancilla with non-negative representation, take a whole bunch of copies of that ancilla, it still has non-negative representation, apply some really big Clifford, it's a stochastic transformation, so the thing that you get out has non-negative representation, do post-selection on a stabilizer measurement, right? And this is maybe the non-trivial bit, but it turns out that that's still going to have non-negative representation on this space, right? And so the takeaway is that if you start off with something non-negative, what you get out at the end using any possible distillation protocol has non-negative representation, right? And in particular, what this means is that there are pure states. So because we've already seen that every pure state which is not a stabilizer has negative representation, it is impossible to get arbitrarily close to an arbitrary pure state. And in fact, there are pure states where like the highest fidelity you can have with them is like 50%. Like it's very, very far. Okay? And so at least for the magic state distillation scheme for using Clifford resources, right? So if your scheme for making use of Clifford resources is to consume a bunch of ancillas, right, to try and distill something of high purity, to distill a non-stabilizer resource with high purity, you can't do it. But there's something funny here, right? Because I motivated this sort of by saying, look, if your resource theory is you have access to Clifford operations, then negativity, I wanted to say, was a quantum resource in an analogous way to the way that entanglement is a quantum resource if your operational restriction is to LOCC. And now what I've actually shown is if you're in particular interested in magic state distillation, right, the way you are making use of Clifford resources is through magic state distillation protocols, then you can't get, then it doesn't work. But that doesn't sort of eliminate like really exotic protocols which do something totally different, right? Like I haven't attacked that. And this is as far as the paper went, but we can sort of go one step further and actually say, well, no, negativity is necessary if you just have this proper operational restriction to Cliffords, if you're just doing arbitrary things with Cliffords. And basically, the way to see that is that you can construct an explicit simulation of anything you do with things that have non-negative representation and just use Cliffords. And so basically your setup is you have some preparation rho, which you're promised has a non-negative representation. You evolve it under a Clifford operation, which corresponds to this symplectic matrix F, which has low dimension. I mean, it's just linear in the number of bits, right? And you want to perform some measurement. And then to simulate that, you just do sort of a Monte Carlo protocol where you sample a point of the ontic phase space, right? So you have some like underlying space of things which actually happen, right? You sample from the distribution, which corresponds to the quantum state. Now you evolve this point that you have sampled under the symplectic matrix, which is easy. It's just multiplying a linear sized matrix with a vector, and now you sample from the measurement outcomes again according to this Gross-Wigner construction, and maybe the only subtlety here is that this sampling according to this distribution in general might not be easy. I mean that could well be exponentially hard, and I mean that's totally unavoidable, right? Because to even write down a general quantum state is exponentially difficult, right? But at least in the case where your input is separable, which is the case for quantum computation, this does check out, right? So it's easy to sample from a separable distribution, right? And so everything works. And so because we have this explicit classical simulation, it is really clear that negativity is necessary in this totally general scenario where what you're given access to are Clifford resources. Yes?
I guess I have missed some of your attention. How did you define your points in the phase space?
So, So the phase space itself is just a d by d grid, right? And then the sort of the relevant definition is the second bullet point up here, right? Where we have this explicitly constructed Hermitian operator, and we want to assign a distribution over this d by d grid. And so the value of the distribution at a particular point, right, is given by the trace of rho with this explicitly constructed Hermitian operator. So
because you say, for example, Clifford is just to a permutation, but it's certainly true for a specific representation of, for a specific choice of those matrices.
It's true for a specific choice of these matrices. I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. So the point is, the thing which picks out these matrices as the ones that you use is that they are covariant under the Clifford group. So the fact that these Cliffords correspond to permutations is the salient fact about these.
So that's how you have to find
your... Yes, that's exactly how they're picked out, right? And so on the next line, you can see that you can write them out explicitly as just sums of the Heisenberg-Weyl operators.
So the claim is that negativity with respect to these specific bases is the resource.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. Right. And now this basis, like this choice of quasi-probability representation, is motivated by the fact that it reflects your operational restriction, right? Like what you have a non-negative representation for, right, is Clifford resources. And your operational restriction was, in a hand-wavy sort of way, to Clifford resources, right? And so that's exactly the claim. Negativity with respect to this particular choice.
In other words, if I may choose another basis, but negativity with respect to that basis doesn't apply, this is a resource, for example.
Well, it depends how you choose your basis, right? Negativity with respect to an arbitrary basis doesn't mean anything.
You have fixed your operations, and for that operation, there is this given basis.
Yeah. Okay,
so
great.
I have two questions. So this sum, it's like some over u, and you define a state 0, 0. Yeah. What is this u and what?
So remember, this is odd dimensional, right? So the natural generalization of the Pauli group to odd dimensional systems is the Heisenberg-Weyl group, and they can be indexed by elements of a finite.
Yeah, so are you summing over all u's or?
Yeah, you're summing over all u's.
But isn't that invariant under conjugation? What afterwards?
No, because you pick up phases. Oh. Right. So you sum across all u's and then for instance, it's generally the case that something like this is going to be e to the.
Basically some phase bands to be.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. It's just going to be u v t v.
Okay.
Right. So that's how you get d squared uniforms. Okay, great. So
u and v are integers log d.
Yeah, they're elements of a finite field. That's right. Okay, great. So now we have this stochastic representation for magic state distillation with non-negative input states. And the question is sort of, does this even matter, right? Like we wanted, we started off saying we want to address this question about, which quantum states are going to enable universal quantum computation. And so it's at least in principle possible that every state with non-negative representation is just a convex combination of stabilizer states, right? And I mean, in fact, that might be what you expect, right? Like the only pure states with non-negative representation are stabilizer states. And so does this bound really say anything beyond the conceptual insight? And the answer is actually, it does. So there are a very large class of mixed states which have non-negative representation, but which cannot be prepared as a convex combination of stabilizer states, right? So now we've said something like really fundamentally new from this insight, right? Like we have all of these mixed states, they're outside of the range of things that we can prepare with our assumed resources, but they're still not going to enable universal quantum computation in this magic state model.
Uh-oh. Oh no.
Oh no. Okay. Okay, that's bad. But let's not let it interrupt the flow. So I'll boot back up. Great. So, okay, good. So I wanted to draw a picture on the blackboard anyways, and this is a great opportunity to do that. Yeah. Don't need to erase anything. So how could you possibly, or how do you go about showing something like that, right? So my claim is that there are, oh shit. Booted into the wrong operating system. Okay, great. So my claim is that there are all of these mixed states with non-negative representation, which can't possibly be represented as convex combinations of pure states with non-negative representation. And so how do we show that? Well, basically the idea is that if you're interested in the set of convex combinations of stabilizer states, right, you can think of that as being a convex polytope, right? And then there are two ways of specifying a convex polytope. You can either think of it as as a list of the vertices of the polytope, right? Or you can think of it as a list of half space inequalities. And the insight here is that the half space inequalities specified by non-negativity, right? So the condition that trace rho AU is greater than zero, that those half space inequalities will correspond to the half space inequalities defining facets of the stabilizer polytope. Right? And I mean that is like completely, you know, at least to my mind, that's completely miraculous. That didn't have to be, right? Because really what you have here is, say, this is the quantum state space, right? And this is, well, maybe it is obvious. I don't know. I changed my mind, right? So this is the classical probability simplex, say, right? And what happens is that you can show that restricted to the state space, right? The facets of the simplex restricted to the state space are facets of the stabilizer polytope, right? And to sort of show the bound states, what you can see is that in general, these half space inequalities, corresponding to the stabilizer polytope, right, which is the internal thing, still have this region of the state space, which is outside of the stabilizer polytope, but inside the classical probability simplex, right? So everything here and here and here, right? All of those have non-negative representation, but they are strictly outside of what can be done what can be prepared using just convex combinations of stabilizer resources, right? And so now this question of negativity, right? You can say a negative state is one which you know, your quantum state happens to be outside one of these distinguished facets of the stabilizer polytope, right? So in general, there are like, you know, exponentially many faces. We've picked out just a set of d squared of them. Sorry, there are a number of faces which are exponential in dimension. We've picked out just d squared of them. We've said these are the distinguished facets of the stabilizer polytope, right? And now if you're just like a little bit outside of this distinguished facet, you're negative, right? And now we want to say this is a resource for quantum computation under the operational restriction that you have access to Clifford operations.
The bound states are mixed, right, due to this Hudson's theorem.
Yes, exactly. The bound states must be mixed. And so. Great. So I mean, already you can see this. But in the case of the qubit, right, where the boundary of the state space are all pure states, then there can't be any analogous result, right? So I mean, we said Look, we're setting this thing up for odd dimensional systems, and in fact, there isn't an analog for qubits already. Like already, we can see that. And so we'll talk about that. Okay, great. So right. So as I said, the set of positive states is a strict subset of the space of quantum states, but it is a strict superset of the stabilizer polytope, right? And right. And so how do we go about showing this? Well, it just turns out that these half space inequalities given by trace A U rho correspond to these facets of the stabilizer polytope. And one thing which is really remarkable about this, which I just want to emphasize again, is that these operators AU have a completely separable structure. I mean, they're just products of these Hermitian operators, right? So even though the stabilizer polytope is this object which its vertices are like super highly entangled states in general. I mean, it has a very complex geometry. These particular distinguished facets have almost the simplest structure you could ask for. I mean, they're just tensor products of operators which you can write out explicitly. And so this gives something really nice, right? It gives a way of sort of efficiently experimentally verifying when you have a negative state, right? So consider this as your sort of operational setup, right? I mean, we said we want to be in a scenario where Clifford operators are relatively error-free, right? I mean, that was our operational motivation. So suppose we appeal to the theory of quantum error correction. We just choose like a 5 qutrit encoding as our error correcting scheme, right? And now we have this logical qutrit encoded in 5 physical qutrits, and we want to say, is this a reasonable architecture for making a quantum computer, right? Like can this be our building block for quantum computation? And so you want to test, how well you can do Clifford's on that thing, right? So you use randomized benchmarking to test how well you can do the logical Clifford's on your encoded qutrit, right? And so that's relatively efficient. But then you also want to know how well you can do a non-Clifford resource on this logical qutrit space, right? And in general, that'd be quite difficult because you would have to, you might think that you would have to do tomography on a the full 5 physical qutrits and then somehow like analyze the state that you got out to see is this thing negative or non-negative. But as it turns out, all you need to do is directly measure negativity at any point to verify that you're doing something really outside of the purvey of Clifford resources. And what's more, this measurement is totally separable. So I mean, you can just sort of do the measurement on each qutrit individually. All you need is like weak control on each qutrit to prepare in a totally separable way to prepare the states, right? So to verify this non-Clifford resource, all that is required is measuring one Hermitian operator which has the simplest possible structure, right? And so that's pretty nice. And then what's more is that at least in prime dimension, up to a fairly weak condition, this choice of quasi probability representation was the unique one which gave us these stabilizers as being non-negative, and stabilizer PVMs as being non-negative, right? So up to a fairly weak condition, this is sort of the only choice of quasi probability representation which satisfied our operationally restricted conditions, right? So what's interesting is that measuring this operator, demonstrating negativity here, if you believe that the operationally motivated restriction is relevant, measuring negativity is a demonstration of contextuality, right? Because what this maybe that's not obvious, but work by Rob Speckin showing the equivalence of contextuality and the impossibility of representing what you're doing in a non-negative quasi-probability distribution, right? So these are two equivalent notions. You have contextuality and the inability to represent what you're doing in a non-negative distribution, right? And so now if you believe that this is the unique choice of non-negative representation, right, encompassing your operational restriction, then by measuring one of these operators and showing you have a negative expectation value, then you have experimentally demonstrated contextuality in this system. All right, great. So this is the experimental verification. And now we'll just close with some open problems. One is qubits. So can this be extended to qubits? And again, the classical representation of a stabilizer, a classical representation of the stabilizer formalism for qubits is impossible, right? And one way to see that, we already said, like, look at this cartoon, that's sort of compelling. But another way to see that is, given this equivalence of non-negative representation and non-contextuality, and the fact that you can violate a Bell inequality using only stabilizer resources, right? It's now easy to see that actually no, it is fundamentally impossible to use the same sort of argument in the case of qubits, right? And so can bound states exist anyways, right? Like this argument isn't going to work in the qubit case, but is it still, you know, conceivable that bound states do exist? And it's not clear. And maybe it's even possible to sort of turn the question around and say, well, you know, the non-existence of any quasi-probability representation implies that there can't be any bound states outside of the stabilizer hull. It's not totally clear to me. But what's maybe even more exciting is the question of sufficiency. So we said, you know, negativity is a necessary resource, right? In the same sense that entanglement is a necessary resource. But negativity is a much simpler creature than entanglement. And so what's a really interesting question is, you know, given that the representation used here is the unique one, at least in prime dimension, right? So if you have sort of like anything outside of this probability simplex, then you know you don't have a classical probability representation for it, right? But is that enough to say that you have access to all of quantum theory, right? So can you get, you know, by being a little bit outside of what's classical in this sense, all of quantum? You know, does there exist some protocol, you know, given a state with some fixed amount of negativity to distill to an arbitrarily high amount of negativity and then consume that, you know, to implement Clifford operations? And I mean, I think that's a pretty exciting question, right? Because if you could answer that, it would give you, you know, at least in this framework, a total unification of the idea of negative representation and quantum computational speedup. Right, and I think that would be like very exciting. I would be excited, at least. Okay, great. And so this is the last slide, which is just a summary of what we've done here. Right, so we constructed this stochastic representation of magic state distillation. We said, look, negativity is necessary for universal quantum computation, the magic state model, and in fact, it's even stronger than that. It's necessary if you have Clifford resources as the available thing, then the negativity, just like entanglement, is the thing that you've got to add into your system. And then you can use this to show the existence of bound states for magic state distillation, which is a new result. And this quantity is easily experimentally verifiable, right? And now we just closed with these two open problems. And that's it. Big references there. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the great talk. Questions?
Yes?
This property of negativity is an all or nothing thing. Have you thought about whether you can construct a module out of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a question of how much negativity you have, right? So I mean, one natural way of looking at it is to say, okay, let's say that this is one of the distinguished faces, right? So if you're right outside here, then you have just like a little bit of negativity, right? So negativity just has a linear relationship to the fidelity to this state over there, right? So take an eigenstate of the operator corresponding to this half space inequality, right? And then construct this, and that's the natural analog to the magic state. Then negativity has a linear relationship to the fidelity with the magic state, right? And so your monotone might be, you know, pick out sort of the area of space that you're interested in. So maybe take the maximum negative value over the phase space and call that your monotone. Right, so the amount of negativity is the resource.
Yeah. is it not increasing on the tree for updation?
Yeah, it totally is, right? Because, I mean, say this is your putrid state, right? And I mean, just say you have something like this, then what a Clifford operation does is just permute the space, right?
Okay. Yeah. You can also couple to another ancillary in a Clifford state and.
Yeah, so even then, say this is coupled, right?
Yeah,
then the larger Clifford is still just going to permute
true.
That, right? And then the post selection is a little tricky, I think. But of course it can increase under post selection because of the whole point of magic state distillation, right?
But I mean, the fact that under closed system, just unitary Cliffords without coupling to ancilla and doing the measurement. This is non-increasing is clear, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's clear to me at least that it's also not increasing.
It's not increasing under what?
Open, like when you couple to another ancilla.
Yeah, well, when you couple to another ancilla.
And then, yeah, discard part of the.
Yeah, but
discarding is the updating. That part is going to increase.
Yeah, in that case, the same thing is true for entanglement as well, right? Like entanglement distillation works on exactly that principle, right? So it's quite logical that you'd be able to do the same thing with sort of negativity distillation.
But yeah, my point is that, I mean, to show that it's monotone, you should show that it's also monotone under all of those operations.
Yeah, it's certainly monotone under, yeah, I mean, it's monotone under whatever a reasonable set of operations is. So it's not monotone under operations sufficient to do magic state distillation,
yeah.
But it is monotone under operations too weak to do magic state distillation, which at least includes stochastic transformations on the space and the ability to throw away states without doing post-selective measurement, that sort of thing. Yes.
So do you know what's the necessary assumption condition for transforming? One state to another under Clifford.
What do you mean? What's a necessary and sufficient condition?
Like if I give you two states.
Well, if one condition would be if you give me two states and their representations are not permutations.
It's again, I mean, you're not talking about just closed system, like a unitary.
Oh yes, I see. So what's a necessary and sufficient condition for transforming one state to another, given that you can take a bunch of copies of it and do a large Clifford?
Not necessarily copies, but you can also couple to ancilla and then discard the ancilla.
Yeah. No, I don't know, but I would guess that my guess would be that you could transform almost like anything into anything else, as long as you preserved non-negativity, given like unlimited copies of your ancilla. And full control on the composite system, but that's just a guess. Like that's not even a conjecture. That is
okay.
I mean, if I was going to go about proving something, that I would sit down and write that out as the thing, and then try and prove it. But
well, I guess something like majorizations might be relevant.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Can you go one slide back? Presentation. So basically, So basically, what I'm wondering is whether this question is kind of well defined. I mean, I believe that you can make some kind of sense of saying how much negativity there is in a certain state, but then given a state. How do you say how much computational speed up it allows?
Well, I mean, in the case of a magic state distillation protocol, it's really clear, right? So say you're building a quantum computer out of qutrits, right? And then you have like some epsilon amount of negativity in your ancilla preparation, right? Then the question is, how many copies of that ancilla preparation do you need in order to implement a non-Clifford gate with fixed fidelity? The hope would be that you could take n copies of that state where n is a function of epsilon, right? Do a distillation protocol to get out something with high purity or high fidelity with the magic state, and then consume that state to do some non-Clifford operation.
I guess it's a speed up over what?
speed up over classical computation, I guess. Well, I guess I don't understand your question, right? Because it classical computation or quantum computation is kind of binary.
The best known classical simulation algorithm, I guess.
Well, I mean, we know that if you don't have negativity, then there is an explicit classical simulation protocol. Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Basically, a related question is whether it's possible to say anything meaningful about this without resolving like B2B versus B.
There are two answers. One is that, at least as presented here, it's conditioned on BQP not equal P. But then I think you could still say something meaningful by saying, given access to what are our operationally restricted resources, which are like basically Clifford operations and post-selection, right? Is the available state space, as soon as you have like access to anything negative, is that available state space the full Qutrit state space? Or is it some subset of the quantum space which nevertheless exceeds the intersection of the quantum state space with the probability simplex? And then if you could answer that question, you would get for free that what you have is BQP. We have access to is BQP. Because no matter how small the amount of negativity that you have, your distillation protocol only adds like a constant overhead, right? Like it's some function of epsilon, but it's not some function of the number of input bits. But yeah, I mean, I think it is a really interesting question to sort of say, well, I'm outside of this classical representation. Does that give me all of the Qutrit or not? So I think that is a well-defined question, even without BQP.
It kind of sounds like more like a universal question.
But in this model, universality is all you need, right? Because if you have universality on the Qutrit, and you've assumed that you can do arbitrary Clifford resources, then that's enough for. Yeah, right.
So apparently, this is an unknown question. If having some extra gate that's outside of the Clifford group on Qutrits that generates. One assumes it is, but
wasn't there like a result that says in general if you have like on any system if you have something outside the words and that you can do a simple thing?
No, it's
this is known.
No, I think it's with probability one, if you select a random unitary which is outside of the Clifford group, then it gives the full unitary group. But in this magic state distillation protocol, the sort of the additional unitaries that you can do are very highly structured, right? I mean, they're the things that you can do by sort of consuming this state with a very special geometry using only Clifford operators. And so it's maybe not totally clear if this
set of gates of matter zero, which don't enable.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So it could be in like that measure zero set, which is not going to enable universal quantum computation. But it would be totally surprising if that was true.
More questions?
Yeah. So you mentioned contextuality, and so for prime, so within this operational restricted scenario and prime dimensions, this you sort of have a proof of some bound on non-contextual models. So it's sort of an inequality once you do measurements. There's like a contextuality inequality.
Yeah,
because of the
exactly.
Uniqueness in prime dimensions.
Yeah, because of the uniqueness and the equivalence of non-contextuality with the existence of a non-negative representation, then showing that you have negativity in just this one choice is just a contextuality inequality. But again, the interesting question is, well, so, you know, probably you can formalize that and show that just having negativity really does guarantee that you have something contextual. But again, that's not clear if contextuality is universal for quantum computation, as it were. But like, as soon as you have something contextual, does that mean you have quantum or not? That's the question.
More questions?
No, so let's thank Victoria again.